Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Death Valley Hideout by Dana Mentink. Running from a murderer with only the desert as refuge. Placed in Witsec while his brother testifies against a terrifying criminal, Tony Ortega must guard his young niece and nephew from the hitman hunting for them. Death Valley local Willow Duke's hideout might just be the difference between the little family's life or death. When bullets start flying, can they thwart a killer long enough to survive and become a family for real?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I have with me Dana Mentink and Terry Reed, a returning guest, and they both write for Love Inspires Suspense and other books as well. So welcome to my show, Terry.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you said that Death Valley Hideout is one in a series. Is it the first one? How does it fall in the series?
It's number four, kind of in the middle there, four of six. So We're working our way through the Duke cousins. Yes. And, each book kind of features a different member of the family. So it's really a fun series to write.
Okay. So now I have Dukes of Hazzard going through my brain.
I know, right? No, but there's no cars that they have to jump in the window. It's more horses than cars. So.
Yeah. And I bet the women aren't wearing those short shorts either.
No. Everybody is fully clad in the story. Yeah. Well, it's Death Valley, so you're not going to want to, be too scantily clad in a climate that can get to 130 degrees. So.
So what made you pick the name Duke then?
I don't know. There's just something about that resonates. Maybe the whole John Wayne connection, I mean, yeah. It's just seems like such an honest, straightforward name to me.
Yeah. And that's the last name of your family's.
That's the last name of the clan. Mostly, they're not all siblings, so there's some cousins in there and such and sundry. But yeah, so they're all hanging out in Furnace Falls, Death Valley.
Okay, and remind me because my geography is horrible. Where is that in the United States?
Well, Death Valley kind of straddles California, Nevada a little bit. It's in the Mojave, you're going to get pretty extreme temperatures, and you definitely don't want to visit in the summer. When we've gone, we've always made sure it was February, where there's optimal temperatures. So
yeah, we were just talking earlier when we're recording this is late May, and it's going to be really hot where I am. I'm not ready for it to be hot.
Right, but there's hot and then there's 130 degrees. So there's hot and then there's life-threateningly hot. So
right,
that's what you get in Death Valley.
And in Death Valley, you don't have the humidity either.
No, it's definitely a dry heat.
Mm-hmm. A dry heat, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what kind of, I can think of a bazillion ways for your characters to get into trouble in Death Valley. So how do you keep that fresh throughout the books so everyone's not having, heat stroke?
Right. And you don't want it to be like Jessica Fletcher, right? Every single relative that comes to visit drops dead, that kind of thing. You want to
avoid
that.
Exactly.
Well, fortunately, Death Valley is extremely far flung, and there's a lot of different elements to it. There's there was underground mining. There's the natural dangers of the heat and some of the critters that live there. But mostly, as in every suspense, it's the people that are the most dangerous. So you have to keep focusing on that. It's not really the external climate that's causing the problems as much as the people who want to kill you. So,
yeah. So maybe only go to Death Valley if you're with your trusted friends and family.
There you go. Well, there's a phenomenon called death by GPS, because a lot of people go to Death Valley and they think, oh, no problem. I have a GPS. I can get out of anywhere. And you really can't. So you want to travel with people who you trust and who know the area, and don't go all off track in Death Valley, people. Stay on the trails.
Yeah. At least always come prepared with maps and water. And I mean,
absolutely. Don't assume that somebody will be there to come along and help you if you need it.
Right. Well, so when my funny story about maps, I mean, I think maps are really, you know, good, but you're right. GPS doesn't isn't always our friend. So we've really tried to help our kids. So I have two drivers right now and two more coming. And, you know, we talk about, well, you can't rely on it 100%. You should preview the route. You should have an idea of where you're going. You should make sure that it kind of makes sense. Because sometimes the GPS is like, get off the highway, get back on the highway. And you're like, what was that about?
Exactly. Yeah. You can't really hand over your brain to an electronic device. It's a bad idea.
It is a very
bad idea. I say that as somebody who's lost all the time. I perpetually lost everywhere. So GPS was a wonderful invention, but it's not infallible.
No, same, Dana. My family thinks it's crazy. I'm always like, oh, that was my accident.
Well, whoopsie woo. Yeah, I know. I feel you.
Yeah, I'm always telling them, you can turn around. It's easy to turn around. Don't cross three lanes of traffic to get to the exit. You can take the next one and turn around. Sure, it's going to add a little time, but better that than than veering off. So how do you interweave your characters then throughout your book series? I know you're focusing on a different one. I mean, there's a different hero and heroine in each one. But how do you kind of do your characters in book one appear in book four? Do you have any of those repeat secondary?
You know, it's tricky, right? Because if you put all 8-10 main characters in all the books, your readers are going to get confused. So the spotlight is on one and there's others filtering around the background. But generally, I try to not overwhelm the reader with everybody. But I like the last book to kind of, or the next to the last somewhere in there to be kind of like an ensemble book at some point. You know, I want them to be together as a family and you can see how things have grown and progressed for the characters. So it's a balancing act, as is all writing, as you know, Sarah. It's kind of like too much is it's like salt. Too much, way too much. Too little, just right is hard to get, but that's what you want.
Yes, and it is. And as someone who doesn't really like salt.
See what I mean? Like my mother doesn't eat salt at all. So if I salt food the way I usually do, it's way too salty for her, right? So it's a very interesting, it's kind of like a reader's, I guess, to have a different palate, but you don't want to overwhelm them, that's for sure.
No, and I can appreciate that as a reader who have read books where they just kept introducing character after character. And I'm like, I need like a spreadsheet. I don't want a spreadsheet when I read. I mean,
in those Agatha Christie murder mysteries, they the first page was like, here's all the characters and like, that was really hard to follow. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to have people have the roadmap to get through your book, you know?
But as a writer, I can't keep them all straight either. I don't want to have a spreadsheet with, you know, 25 people I have to keep straight, you know, because they appear. And it's fine though, if they appear in one scene and I know I'm not going to use them again, because we have people like that, because we need them. You know, the mailman who does something significant, but we don't need to see the mailman again. Or, you know, there's other people that got the person at the coffee shop who makes a phone call for him. You know, I mean, there's people that we maybe have to name or describe, but we don't have to use them. Those are okay. But the people who are like integral to the story, well, they don't need to keep appearing. It's just like,
that's also the beauty of series, right? Because you can introduce a seemingly throwaway character in the first book that's going to be very, very important later. So that's, I kind of enjoy that challenge too. Like, who owned the bookstore in book one? Because this time, you know, so you do have to kind of keep track of your town more or less so that your readers can keep track of your town. Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you do that? Do you like have a little map with your town? Do you have like all
the- I do have a map with my town. Yeah. Cool. For my mysteries, I actually created the town and drew it out, and my daughter kind of illustrated it for me. So when I'm like, what street was that on? You know, for my suspense novels, I usually model it closely after a real town, you know, just regionally. So I make lots of notes. I'm a post-it person, you know, but you do have to make notes. Otherwise your reader will say, hang on a minute. That store wasn't next to that gas station in book one. You know, readers are so savvy. They don't forget.
And I think that it's wonderful and it's also frightening as a writer.
Absolutely. Well, sometimes they forgive, though. They might not forget, but they do forgive. They understand you're a writer and you have many worlds in your head and many real things in your life, too, like children and husbands and bills and, you know, sickness and things like that that you need to juggle. So most readers I find are super forgiving about mistakes. Like when I changed the character, the little boy's name from book one to book two. Not in this series, but in a previous series, I get very nice mail about that. Like, that's so interesting. Did you know that you did that? And I say, yes, and I'm so sorry. But there it is. Can't be fixed now. It's out of there in black and white.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes the editors change things that
they do. You
know, they don't mean to, but they change things. And then sometimes we don't always catch it on when we're looking through it and going on. And we're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, nuts. Now I've got a problem.
Yeah. Now, okay. Now I'm going to get reader mail about that. But these people are talking to you about your books.
That's right. So, as long as it's nice mail, I'm fine. Don't send me anything in all caps though. No.
So the book that we're kind of focusing on is Detection Detail. And you mentioned earlier that before we started recording that it's a continuity series. Can you explain what that means? I'm not even sure as a writer, I know what that means. So
sure, I can do that. Yeah. So a continuity is a series of books that are connected by a overarching mystery thread that runs through each book, and each book drops a new clue or furthers this investigation in that overarching mystery. But then each book has its own little, but it has its own suspense thread that involve the main characters. And you will see interaction between the characters in all of the books. So it's usually, in this case, the Detection Detail book is the first book in the Rocky Mountain Canine Unit. So it's a unit of 8 or 10 canine officers who work together and solve mysteries or crimes throughout the Rocky Mountain range. And so you'll see the characters in each book, but each book focuses on just one of the canine officers and a love interest, and they solve their own crime within that book, but still investigating the overarching crime, if that makes sense. And each book is written by a different author.
Right.
So you get a real sense of, you know, different authors' voices bringing characters to life. And it's quite fun for readers to binge.
Yeah.
Kind of like you would Netflix.
Yeah. Or BritBox is my case, maybe.
Obsessed
with it. Anyway, that's a whole nother conversation, Terry. we don't need to go down that rabbit hole. So how does, as an author in that, how does that work? I mean, if you're trying to do essential mystery, do you each get assigned a piece of the mystery before you get started? How does,
more
of information.
yes. So we're given what we call Bible, which is a overarching storyline that has storylines for every book, and each book has different elements of the continuity mystery that you have to incorporate within your story. And then the next person gets the next clue or the next piece of the puzzle, and then until you get to the end and that author puts it all together.
And have you written these types of books before?
Yes, this is actually, I was counting, I think it's my 12th or 13th of these kind of books.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you must enjoy that kind of writing.
I do. You know, it's really like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. You get all this information and somehow you have to massage it and fix it to fit together and make a cohesive story and still be suspenseful enough for the reader to want to read the next book and then the next. So, And you work closely with the other authors. So writing can, as you know, can be very, you know, lonely, and you're in your writing cave by yourself. And this way you know, we communicate via email, but it's still, you know, you have a problem. You've got people to go to who know what the storyline is and understand the whole arcing thing, who can brainstorm with you right then and there. You don't have to, you know, try to explain everything and then ask for help.
At the end, you hope they're still paying attention so that they
yes.
will give you the help. So have you ever had a case where you felt like, I mean, you're writing the first book in this series. So right. that means that your characters will appear in subsequent books, peripheral right. characters.
Oh, sorry.
I see your dog is.
yes.
How do you get your characters, how do you like other authors handling characters, I guess?
Well, the nice thing is that so far we've all been very respectful of each other. And so when we write somebody else's character, we run it by the other character, other authors, to make sure okay. that we're portraying the character the way they would like it to be portrayed. And if we have a problem, we can ask for a tweak, or we can ask, hey, can you set this up? Can you have her say this? Because I have her doing something in my book that, you know, and it would be great if you could set it up in your book, you know, even if it's two books before. So being the first book, I'm trying to set up all of the different characters all the way down the line. And so it's a lot of moving parts and making sure that I am setting up something for book 7 or book 8 or book 5 or whatever that the author wants.
Right. And in your other continuity books, were you always the first? Have you written in the middle? I think that would be the hardest.
So yeah. I have, yeah, it's, you know, each position within the continuity has its own challenges. I have been the first book in quite a few of them. I've also been the last book in quite a few of them. And I've had some in the middle. It just really depends. The positioning depends on where the editors want you and where the deadlines fall within your own writing, because they don't want you to miss your deadlines for your own books. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, it's an interesting, I mean, it seems so seamless to the readers, right? I mean, that's the whole
right,
goal.
Right. Yes.
There, but sometimes I think peeling back the layer a little bit and going, oh, what is going on here? And how is this working? It's fascinating. And as a writer, I mean, I can see there'd be pros and cons, right, to writing that. I'm sure that it's kind of nice to, like you said, to know you can talk to them about the writing and that it all kind of fits, but it still must be challenging because, you know, you can't have your character doing something out of character.
Right. Right.
Subsequent books might already right. have them doing this.
Yeah.
So how do you juggle that as you're writing?
Well, again, as long as the authors are all working together and we run anything by each other, we haven't really had that much of a problem with that.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, the earlier characters will make just like a cameo appearance in a later book. They don't really have anything to do with what's going on there. So, but, you know, it's really the bookend books are, I think, the hardest, opening book and the closing book, because you want to introduce everybody in the beginning and then you want to tie everybody's love story and suspense story all up in a nice bow at the end.
Well, I wish we could talk more, Terry, but we are almost out of time. So is there anything else about detection detail specifically you would like our listeners to know?
Well, it is my 5th book with Harlequin, my 50th book with Harlequin.
Yeah.
And it was on PW Publisher Weekly bestseller list for 4 weeks in a row. So that was pretty exciting. I've never had that happen. I think readers would really like this series. It's different. It's Rocky Mountains. So it's a lot of outdoor activities. It was a really fun continuity to do.
Well, that's great. So go on and get your detection detail and not start book 1, and the other books I'm sure will be hard on those heels, right? They put them out fairly quickly, I believe.
They do, once a month.
Okay, great. So you can catch up easily. So thank you for being on my show again, Terry. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
You have been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I'm so glad you joined me today. I've been talking with Terry Reed and Dana Mentink, and you can find out more about their latest books and their bio and how to connect with them in the notes to this podcast.
Detection Detail by Terry Reed. An alleged arsonist. A deadly cover-up. Can this canine sniff out the truth? Evidence at a fiery car crash leads canine officer Nelson Rivers and his accelerant detection dog, Diesel, to Mia Turner, a woman previously accused of arson. But when a gunman targets Mia during their first meeting, Nelson suspects she might actually be innocent. Only Mia's hiding something, and Nelson's been burned before. Can they trust each other to catch a killer before the threat engulfs them both?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.